This is Law Bites, a podcast with Michael Geist.
The federal government says TikTok needs to go. It's been ordered to shut down its business operations in Canada. For the millions of Canadians who use TikTok, a lot of question about what this means for the future. The app itself, Linda, isn't going anywhere, but the headquarters, the offices, that infrastructure, that is shut down. Tell us more.
Yeah, so the government's saying that this popular video app poses a risk to Canadian national security, so they're shutting down those two offices in Toronto and in Vancouver. This on the advice of Canada's security and intelligence community. Now, in February 2023, we know the Canadian government banned TikTok from government phones. And then after that, they launched a national security review of the app. So this is basically the result of that review.
The recent announcement by the Canadian government involving TikTok has sparked a lot of questions, as it seems like a curious approach. Canada plans to ban the company from operating in the country, but the app will remain available here. I wrote earlier this year about the need for better laws to counter the risks associated with TikTok rather than banning the app altogether. That post came in response to U.S. legislation that moves towards divestment or a potential ban, but which is now in doubt given the results of the recent U.S. presidential election. There may well be good reasons to ban the app if it poses security and privacy risks that differ from those of other platforms, but banning the company rather than the app may actually make matters worse, since the risks associated with TikTok will remain, but the ability to hold the company accountable will be weakened. Before we get to this week's guest, let's just review what took place. Days after the U.S. election, ICE Minister François-Philippe Champagne released the following, which I'll read in full. Quote, "As a result of a multi-step national security review process, which involves rigorous scrutiny by Canada's national security and intelligence community, the Government of Canada has ordered the wind-up of the Canadian business carried on by TikTok Technology Canada Inc. The government is taking action to address specific national security risks related to ByteDance Limited's operations in Canada through the establishment of TikTok Technology Canada Inc. The decision was based on the information and evidence collected over the course of the review and on the advice of Canada's security and intelligence community and other government partners. The government is not blocking Canadians' access to the TikTok application or their ability to create content. The decision to use a social media application or platform is a personal choice. It is important for Canadians to adopt good cybersecurity practices and assess the possible risks of using social media platforms and applications, including how their information is likely to be protected, managed, used, and shared by foreign actors, as well as to be aware of which country's laws apply. The government encourages Canadians to consult the guidance issued by the Communications Security Establishment Canada's Canadian Centre for Cybersecurity to help them assess the risks. The government's decision was made in accordance with the Investment Canada Act, which allows for the review of foreign investments that may be injurious to Canada's national security. The government applies enhanced scrutiny to investments that fall within the jurisdiction of the Investment Canada Act for a number of business sectors and activities, including the interactive digital media sector, as outlined in the March 2024 policy statement on foreign investment review in the interactive digital media sector. While Canada continues to welcome foreign direct investment, the government will act decisively when investments threaten our national security." End of quote. So what to make of the decision? In a moment, I'm going to be joined by Scott Benzie, the executive director of Digital First Canada, which has been a leading voice for Canadian digital creators. But first, I should note that I've expressed doubts about a TikTok ban in the past. There are legitimate concerns with social media companies, but there simply hasn't been convincing evidence that TikTok currently raises a national security threat, nor that it poses a greater risk than any other social media service. But even if you're convinced that we need to act, acknowledging that some of the information the government is relying upon is not publicly available, I still don't get this decision. First, I'd start by fixing our privacy laws. The government's efforts to provide comprehensive privacy safeguards have stalled in the House of Commons and now face the prospect of not passing before an election call. This is due in part to the ill-advised decision to combine long-overdue privacy reforms with AI regulation. This new announcement doesn't solve the larger privacy issues facing Canadians. Second, I fear this decision undermines existing privacy laws and may ironically make matters worse by weakening the ability to hold TikTok accountable for the privacy and security of Canadians. Third, the decision would also seem to undercut the government's digital policies, particularly its emphasis on contributions from internet platforms. For that issue, and the broader implications of the TikTok decision on Canadian creators, let's turn to my discussion with Scott Benzie. Scott, welcome back to the podcast.
Thank you very much.
And yeah, no, it's great to have you. You know, just led off with a bit of an introduction and discussion on what's been taking place with Canada and TikTok, particularly on privacy and security matters. And in that sense, no surprise that there are some privacy and security related issues with the company, a bit of a surprise about what they've done, the Canadian government has done in terms of focusing more specifically on the company rather than the app. But I think there's been an important part of the story that has been largely overlooked, and that's the cultural impact. Can you get us started by talking a bit about what the TikTok creator economy looks like in Canada? This is in some ways a little bit of a repeat of some of the debate around C11, but you know, how big is it and how do creators make money on the platform?
Yeah, I think I'm having a little bit of PTSD as you brought that up. You know, I think one of the things that we have to do, and we don't do it well enough in this country, and we don't do it well enough actually around the world, you know, nobody's really a TikToker. So people say TikToker and they say YouTuber. When we talk about the creator economy, people use different platforms for different reasons. And no, you know, I would say professional or even emerging creator would consider themselves a TikToker. All platforms have different values and are used in different ways. So it's really hard. I only say that as a preamble because it's really hard to isolate, you know, what the specific TikTok impact could be. But I mean, all that to say, there are thousands of Canadians making tens of millions of dollars on the TikTok platform every year. That number increases exponentially if you start including other platforms. Like TikTok, for example, is a really excellent discovery device, right? You grow your community on TikTok and then send them over to your YouTube channel where there might be more monetization opportunities. So, you know, there is... You're right that people aren't talking about this from a cultural lens. And I feel like we've been here before in C11 that, you know, there's a group of people in this country that is not small that for some reason, you know, their concerns or you know, how they make a living isn't really being considered when people are making laws or decisions around culture.
Yeah. Can you tell me a bit about who some of those Canadians might be, some of the Canadian success stories when it comes to TikTok?
Yeah, I think, you know, the biggest Canadian success story around TikTok specifically, like if you wanted to pull something out of TikTok specifically, is what we've seen out of the Indigenous community. You know, there has been no bigger boon to Indigenous culture, not just in this country, but the global exposure of Canadian Indigenous culture than TikTok has had. And that actually is a direct result of some of the programs that TikTok has put in place. They have the Indigenous Accelerator Program. They support our program, Road to Freedom, where we go into community and give kids the tools to create. But while we're doing this, like I can off the top of my head, Sherry McKay, Notorious Cree, Sheena Nova, Fawn Wood, Vanessa Brousseau, Karen Potts. I mean, I would like to see the traditional media be able to, that's literally off the top of my head. I mean, those are all Indigenous Canadian creators that are having global success because of TikTok.
Yeah, that's an amazing story and one that I don't think is being told really at all.
Yeah, we've seen it a little bit. One of the big things that they've really pulled out of it is language. So Indigenous language and the success it's having on TikTok going around the world where people are teaching, you know, we all often hear in the culture wars around, you know, the French language and Indigenous language, and those concerns are valid. But there's no better tool to keep those alive than the tools that are reaching young minds and young voices in an engaging way.
Yeah. Now, I want to come to some of the concerns that some of the creators might have with TikTok. Not
Sure.
to suggest everything's rosy,
No, not at all.
but before we do that, you alluded to some of the contributions that TikTok has been making. Can you talk a bit about what the platform itself, what provides? Obviously, it's providing the platform, but beyond that, what are some of the kinds of programs that it has? Because presumably, if the company gets kicked out of the country, some of those programs and supports are have been pla will be placed at risk.
Yeah, so this is a tough one for culture because I think it's important to recognize in these conversations that we're Canadian, and in a global, in a global sphere, in a global economy, it's really tough to get attention sometimes. And I can, Snap has a very small presence here in Canada. YouTube has a very good presence here in Canada. TikTok has a very good presence here in Canada. From a creator standpoint, you can't call Meta, you can't call Instagram. Can't really call Snap, you can't call Twitch. There are two companies in this country that really support Canadian creators, and I think it's important to call them out and to recognize that. Losing one of them hurts a lot. And one that has made efforts to be a good culture and Canadian partner. I mean, they support the Junos, they support TIFF, they support Oceaga, they support Buffer Festival. They have the Indigenous Accelerator Program. They have partner managers. They have events that introduces creators to brands. And it's real tough as Canadians to get that kind of attention sometimes. Losing that is going to hurt. When I, bit of a tangent, but when the C11 conversations were happening, the government asked me, Scott, what's the one thing that we could have the platforms do that would help Canadian creators? And my answer was make them answer the phone. And I think it was kind of dismissed, but it's a real issue because if you're up here in Canada and you're a creator and you're not one of the top, 100, it's really tough to get help. So my answer was pick up the phone, just have somebody here to answer the questions and get to concerns of creators. Only two companies do that, and now only one. And I think that's a real disservice to Canadian creators.
Okay. Now that inability to be in contact with or have a contact with some of the platforms you highlight as being a concern that creators might have hasn't been one to date with TikTok, but might be down the road if in fact the company's gone. Or have there been concerns though with the creative community and TikTok itself? And if
Yeah, I mean,
so, what have they been?
for sure. So, talking from purely from a creator standpoint, the number one complaint about TikTok, and it is not lost, is the lack of a program for Canadians to monetize on the platform. If you ever see TikTok on stage speaking at any conference, Q&A is real easy to predict. The first question is going to be, where's our program to monetize content? They have in the States, they've rolled it out, I think, as a test in a couple other places, but we don't have it here. And guess we will never have it here if they kick them out of the country. But that's a real issue. And then, there are some issues that people have around privacy and data, but I think that's not just a TikTok issue. It's a macro issue around our data security and our privacy. And I think, the government should regulate all apps to secure our data and secure our privacy. And I just really don't think kicking TikTok out achieves any of that. I mean, good luck calling somebody into Heritage Committee meeting after you've kicked them out of the country. I if you look at some of the real big proponents of C11 who had problems with TikTok, the problems were all around, oh, they're taking all our eyeballs, nobody's really watching our stuff anymore, they need more exposure for our stuff. They should be the most up in arms about this decision because you're actually picking out a partner that is at the table and that we can have conversations with. I mean, good luck trying to leverage, Quebec music anywhere into the algorithm or any special services once they leave the country. So I think there are a lot of problems with TikTok that need to be addressed, and this decision doesn't address any of them. In fact, hurts most of them. So it all seems a little bit counterproductive to me.
Interesting. I want to stick for a moment at the monetization piece
Sure.
because when you mentioned that it's a question that comes up, my recollection as part of those C11 debates was it came up then, and the response from TikTok was it's coming, it's coming. And so, can you talk a bit about how that functions elsewhere and what, if anything, TikTok has been saying, at least up until this point, about why we haven't seen that in Canada?
Yeah, so it was rolled out in the States, I think, you know, don't hold me to this, around 3 years ago. Wasn't an overly successful program because it was a limited pot of money that didn't grow as your views grew. So, you know, the YouTube monetization model is real simple, right? You get 50% of the revenue that we get. The more views you get, the more it's real simple math. The TikTok program wasn't really like that. So there were a lot of complaints out of the US about the way that rolled out. Now, that all that said, I mean, it was something, right? It was a step in the right direction that they're trying to course correct for. You know, every meeting I've had with TikTok or creators, it comes up. And, you know, when I've asked them, it's we're working on it, we're working on it, we're working on it. I would like to see it soon. I would like to see it fast. You know, I would like to see it here now. I think we're a perfect country for it. Because, you know, population wise, we're not a huge country. But our reach and the way we punch above our weight on these platforms, I think there's real opportunities for Canadians to make a lot of real money on the platform. I would like to see it, please, now. We haven't got a clear answer on that. I would like one.
Yeah. Now that you've hinted already at what some of the impact might be, but you know, given that they are focusing not on the app, not on the ability of creators to upload or users to continue to engage with the app, but rather on the offices, and there are two, one in Toronto and one in Vancouver. From your perspective, what's the impact of closing the offices? Obviously, losing some of the kinds of sponsorship that we just talked about in the direct contact might be it, but if there are others, I'd be interested. You know, the minister, when asked about it, tried to suggest that it was really just a few jobs for people who work directly for TikTok, and indicated that he thought that that was primarily non-Canadians that were working for TikTok here in Canada.
Right. So, I mean, TikTok has said that's not true. I'm going to give you a real practical example. And this is, again, from the creator perspective specifically. So we had a young lady reach out to us, very successful on TikTok. She was being her account was being stolen and hacked and mimicked. So they take your content, they open up a new account with your image, and all your content somewhere else in the world. Maybe it's monetized, maybe it's not. Who knows what nefarious purposes it's for. So she actually reached out to DFC and she said, you know, what can I do here? What's my recourse? I picked up the phone, I called somebody at TikTok Canada and they fixed it. You know, we had another case where a guy was live streaming on TikTok and his account kept getting incorrectly shut down and banned. I picked up the phone, I called TikTok and they fixed it. Now, these are really small. I mean, these are two anecdotal evidences, but you know, our abilities to support creators in that way with TikTok is going to be gone. I think there's a larger issue of, you know, I believe in data security, right? I think the Canadian government should say to TikTok, you know, fix all these problems. Whatever the problem that they found is, give them an opportunity to fix it. I don't know if it's been articulated. It's top secret, apparently. Give them an opportunity to fix it. Get back to the table. Use it as leverage. I mean, I don't know why the government can't get to TikTok and say, fix all these programs. Oh, and by the way, we want a monetization program for Canadians. You got to do that too. You know, that would be real concrete help that the Canadian government could take to help creators. But, you know, at a political level, I mean, you know, TikTok's been really good about being in heritage meetings. TikTok's been really good about being in Senate meetings. We're just eliminating our ability to regulate the platform in any meaningful way. In a global sense, Canada's not all that important, right? And you see it when you try to get people up here from other platforms. And I think it really hurts to take a company out of Canada without explanation and without a chance to course correct and without a chance to do things that could benefit Canadians. I just think, you know, not innovation. This is not the word I would use to describe the decision that's been made.
Yeah, no, I must admit, I had quite a lot of commentary in the media and found myself really puzzled to try to understand what's taking place. And part of the for that was that, like yourself, was actively involved in the Bill C-11 debate and have seen now for years the government very anxious to get the platforms to pay. I mean, the whole
Right.
idea was you've got to contribute. You know, does this leave your head spinning a little bit as the government, having spent years talking about the desirability of getting platforms to pay, suddenly now adopts a position that actually takes money off the table?
Yeah, I don't, I'm trying not to be a conspiracy theorist about this. I'm trying really hard that there is some, some real national security issue that we're trying to address. But if we look back at digital policy over the last 3, 4 years, I mean, we've both been involved. Look at C11, C18, the digital services tax, and now this. I don't understand, when they say we're trying to support Canadian culture and we're trying to support Canadian creators, I don't understand how this helps. I don't understand how any of it helps. It all seems relatively hurtful. And like we're running a risk of making Canada just some backwater barnyard for culture. No other country has taken this step, none. I mean, I could have fathomed we're banning the app. I wouldn't have liked it. I think I would have said that's a terrible, terrible, terrible decision. Here's all the reasons why. But this decision makes zero sense whatsoever. And I'm a little bit, during the whole C11 process, we heard from the Conservative Party largely that, we support Canadian creators independently doing their own thing. Where are they, right? This is a decision that's affecting those digital creators that, were at the table and fought so hard during C11. And now our government is hamstringing us. You might see a bunch of Canadian creators self-identifying as American, just to get access to services that are allowed and provided in other countries.
Yeah. Now, you mentioned that maybe a ban under the right circumstances might be appropriate. Let me ask you just to expand a little bit. What do you think the government should be doing with respect to, regulating social media, TikTok, I guess, in particular? Is there something that you could see happening that would actually benefit the cultural sector? And I suppose also if, and you hinted at already, if the privacy and security issues are sufficiently serious, do you think a ban might well be appropriate?
I think I like to remove TikTok from the conversations when I'm having these conversations, so it's not as tense of a conversation. But if we look at any app that has data security or privacy issues, they should be regulated. And if those issues aren't fixed to the standard that whatever this standard body is asking for, that app should be banned. I think privacy and data security are paramount. That applies to TikTok, that applies to YouTube, that applies to, the MPs that I see hammering away on Candy Crush. I don't think that's a TikTok issue specifically. When it comes to regulating apps, obviously, well documented, I don't support the regulation of algorithmic intervention. I don't think that serves any purpose. I don't think, this is, again, this is personal, Scott. Now, I was called misinformation for the better part of 2.5 years. Turns out I was right. So I'm a little bit apprehensive about the policing of misinformation through regulation as well. But all that said, I don't think any app should be able to escape the laws of a country or the data and the privacy issues of a country. And as long as we've done a good job of putting those in place, the name of the app doesn't matter anymore.
Okay. Why don't we conclude with this? Speaking of potential things leaving, the US, it would seem, is moving in the opposite direction now. For a time, we had legislation. I've had previous podcast episodes that have talked about US legislation that have basically taken the position that either the company divests or an app ban would be a distinct possibility. The election of Donald Trump returning to the presidency seems to have now resulted in what is likely to be a reversal on that position. If we do end up with a situation where the US says, well, never mind about that divestment and potential blocking of the app, it's full steam ahead for TikTok. And we're left in Canada with a place where, as you say, there isn't anybody to pick up the phone, the funding is gone, the potential for particular creator support is gone as well. Is there a risk that we lose Canadian creators? That was much of the talk around C11, was that you start getting involved with the algorithms and the like, that Canadians might say, hey, we're just better off moving to the US, where that's where, and that way we reach the global market without this regulatory intervention. Is this yet another example that if Canada moves in this direction, you might well find creators saying it's just really tough to make a living on TikTok in Canada, especially when compared to what the regulatory situation looks like south of the border?
I think when you take it as a whole, again, the decisions that have been made over the last 3 years, there's a real risk of, and you know, a newspaper, your C-18 passes, a newspaper can't just pick up and leave Canada, right? So individual creators absolutely can and absolutely will. You know, all of the what I would call hyper successful creators in Canada, they go to the US anyway because there's more opportunity there. I mean, you know, a brand deal with Canadian subsidiary of a giant US company might be worth $10,000. It's worth 60 down there. You know, the good thing about that is Canadians have been able to close those US deals living in Canada. Your borders hasn't mattered, only your audience matters, right? But I think as a whole, the government's policy around culture and innovation runs a real risk of having a talent drain in this country where they go other places. I mean, we talked a lot about, you know, living next to the United States hegemon of culture is why we need to protect Canadian culture, right? We heard that a lot over the last 3 years. It's also true that living here beside them, without the resources that they have, could really harm Canadian creators. And I think, you know, I applaud companies that plant a seed in the country and put their flag down and say, we're going to support your creators. We shouldn't be driving them out. We should be fixing whatever problems we have and supporting their existence. Force them to open an office in Winnipeg and Halifax and Calgary. Don't put Canadian creators more at a disadvantage when competing with our US peers.
Well, I mean, that's been a persistent fear, I think, of many Canadian creators, and one of the reasons that you have seen some of that exodus. They haven't had a strong voice in the past around policy matters, and they seem to be lost yet again on some of these issues. But you and DFC have been a notable source of both important information and advocacy. So thanks both for your work on that and for joining me on the podcast to shed light on the cultural implications of this TikTok decision.
Yeah, thank you very much, Michael. Always appreciate it.
That's the Law Bites podcast for this week. If you have comments, suggestions, or other feedback, write to lawbites@pobox.com. That's LAWBYTES at pobox.com. Follow the podcast on Twitter at Law Bites Pod or Michael Geist at M Geist. You can download the latest episodes from my website at michaelgeist.ca or subscribe via RSS at Apple Podcast, Google, or Spotify. The Law Bites podcast is produced by Gerardo LeBron LeBoy. Music by the LeBoy brothers, Gerardo and Jose LeBron LeBoy. Credit information for the clips featured in this podcast can be found in the show notes for this episode at michaelgeist.ca. I'm Michael Geist. Thanks for listening, and see you next time.